prayer of separation from the Vaishnavas, particularly today, separation from my Parama Guru. I was just thinking, I wish I actually had the heart to feel like this is my grandfather, which of course he is. Prabhupada said the grandfather is even more affectionate than the father. So we ask for his blessings. Dhyanilo prema dhana karuna prachur. Heno Prabhu Kota Gela Acharya Taku. Kahamora Swaru Rupa Kasanata. Kada sarugunata potita pava. Kaha mora bata juga kaha kavira. Eka kale kota gela gura Natara. Pashane kutivo maza Onale poshibo. Goranga gonera nidhi kota gile pabo. Shishabha Sangira Sangha Jekolo Vila. Vira Sangha Jekolo Vila. Sheshanga Na Paya Kande na dutamada. Kande na dutamada. Jaya Vaishnav Thakur, Jaya Vaishnav Thakur, Jaya Vaishnav Thakur, Jaya Vaishnav Thakur. Hila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Hila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Hila brought the treasure of divine love and who is filled with compassion and mercy? Where has such a personality as Srinivasa Acharya gone? Where are my Sarup Damodar and Rupa Goswami? Where is Sanatana? Where is Raghunath Das, the savior of the fallen? Where are my Raghunath Bhatta and Gopala Bhatta? And where is Krishnadas Kaviraj? Where did Lord Gauranga, the great dancer, suddenly go? I will smash my head against the rock and enter into a fire. Where will I find Lord Gauranga, the reservoir of all wonderful qualities? Being unable to obtain the association of Lord Gauranga, accompanied by all these devotees, in whose association he performed his pastimes, Narottam Das simply weeps. Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta Saraswati Thakur ki jai. So today I'm probably going to be doing a lot of reading from the book by Bhaktivikas Swami, Bhaktisiddhānta Vaibhav. Quite an elaborate book, 3 volumes. Covers a lot, has a history of his life, and then it has little essays on different aspects of his personality and his character. So this is the second part of the book about his qualities and character. I'm going to start and read some of that excerpts here and there. Srila Saraswati Thakur was focused, tenacious, and staunch. Like his guru, Srila Gaur Kishore Das Babaji, he was steadfast in renunciation and bhajan. Despite being raised in middle-class comfort, his innate tendency was toward austerity. As an ideal acharya, he never compromised his practice of devotional principles. He carefully observed the details of sadhana bhakti, such as always wearing tilak, regularly chanting the Maha Mantra on beads and reciting Gayatri, and attending aartis. He rose early each morning, usually before anyone else, and rarely napped during the day. Being a nitya siddha, there was no need for Srila Saraswati Thakur to follow such ordinances meant for the uplift of neophytes. Yet he did so to set an example for and induce faith within his disciples and the public at large. He averred that if he were not exemplary, no one would obey him. Whatever he asked of others, he himself followed. Had he relaxed his standards even slightly, Prakrita Sahajas would have taken that as an excuse to continue whimsically neglecting the scripturally prescribed regulations of devotional service. So, of course, the Prakrita Sahajas were among his philosophical opponents. They were very prominent during his time. In fact, Gaudiya Vaishnavism was seen. People saw the example, what they thought was Gaudiya Vaishnavism was the Prakrita Sahajas, those who exhibited different kinds of ecstasies, and actually they often lived very sinful, licentious lives. But they chanted bhajan, and people thought that's what Gaudiya Vaishnavism was all about. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, he was very concerned that you show the principles, the spiritual principles and proper conduct of a Gaudiya Vaishnava. So he himself was ideal in that regard. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati often quoted from Mundaka Upanishad 1.2.12 the terms Kshatriya, learned in Shastras as received in Guru Parampara, and Brahmanishta, fully dedicated to Godhead, emphasizing that these qualifications are necessary for a genuine guru, and that one who has them will naturally also be of irreproachable character. Can you close that? By personally fulfilling these criteria, he established the scriptural standard for accepting the role of guru. Moreover, his inestimable qualities distinguished him as a transcendental giant, fit to be addressed as Jagadguru. Oh, I'm skipping a little something here. Srila Saraswati Thakur was intense. That's a characteristic I tend to think when I think of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. He was definitely intense. And he intensely desired that everyone he came in contact with, and indeed the entire universe, embrace his mood of unremitting dedication to Krishna. His personality was permeated with utter rejection of anything smacking of worldliness. And because his near insistence that others similarly abandon all attachments and fully surrender to Krishna resembled the attack of an aggressor, he was often misunderstood by those he sought to help. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's very presence inspired awe. His glance was so powerful and penetrating that few could bear it. His every movement and gesture expressed extraordinary inner strength. Many smug persons became humbled and submissive simply by entering his presence. As did, well, here's some character, Maharaj Adiraj Vijay Chanda Bahadur of Burdwan, who related, "I often went to see Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati and naturally bowed at his lotus feet whenever I did. Yet at one point I considered, I am the great Maharaj of Burdwan. Among all the highly respectable people in Bengali society, none is more famous or respected than I. Who is this sadhu in comparison to me? Why should I prostrate before him? Next time I won't, and I'll watch how he reacts. On my next visit, I barged in on him and blurted, I have something to say to you. But before I could speak further, my head automatically went down to the floor in front of him. I was unable to wait to see his response to my rudeness." That's an indication of the kind of power that he had. Let's see. The canon governing Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's life was Krishnarte Akila Cheshta. Everything should be done for Krishna. That's from Chaitanya Charitamrita. I was busy satisfying Krishna in innumerable ways. He unwaveringly personified that maxim. Day and night, wherever he happened to be, Srila Saraswati Thakur was constantly absorbed in topics of Krishna. After his heart condition manifested, when people would ask, how are you? He often replied, I am all right, but Kunja Prabhu does not indulge me in Harikatha, hence I am unwell. That's one of his close associates. He had no interest even in bathing in the ocean at Puri or in holy rivers, for he considered such activities a diversion from his life's engagement of immersion in bhajan, preaching, and writing. Although he manifested different moods at different times, he was always thinking of Krishna and was never frivolous, mundane, or mediocre. Occasionally he became pensive and withdrawn. Sometimes he spoke so ferociously that others became unnerved and tremulous. It means they trembled. When delivering Harikatha to his students, he was formal and grave. So he wasn't one to cut jokes in class. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati exemplified Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's statement that wherever the eyes of one with Krishna prema fall, he sees only Krishna. Even when observing apparently prosaic activity of plowing fields, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati respectfully accepted it as an uddipan for service to Krishna. So uddipan means, well, literally means inflaming, so inspiration for Krishna. Because produce from the mud soil was for offering to Krishna and his devotees, and plowing it a reminder of Baladev Sankarshan, the primeval holder of the plow. When in mountainous areas such as Shillong, Mussoorie, Darjeeling, or Arctacamund, his thoughts inevitably turned to Govardhan. And with great enthusiasm, he would continuously douse his companions with Harikatha pertaining to that most sacred of hills. This pure, natural, spontaneous, intense, and uninterrupted attachment for Sri Radha Krishna was Srila Saraswati Thakur's inherent and focal lineament, which combined with his ability and fervent desire to give Krishna to others, revealed him to be an intimate associate of Lord Chaitanya, come to this plane to execute his mission. As he expressed, if a poor man takes the guise of a philanthropist, he can give away only as much as he personally possesses. But the eternal treasure of the Vaishnava is directly Narayana. If Narayana gives himself, he holds a little back. But the Vaishnava can give Narayana completely. He who possesses genuine knowledge of the whole entity, Krishna, is totally devoted to serving Krishna in all ways, and there is nothing comparable to the lotus feet of such a person. Dynamic, resolute, and compelling, Srila Saraswati Thakur was determined to give Krishna to a world unenthusiastic to receive him. He optimistically embarked on projects that in ordinary estimation seemed unachievable and persevered until realizing them. For him, the word impossible did not exist. And upon receiving an order from him, no disciple considered pleading impossible. Indeed, his disciples regarded Srila Saraswati Thakur as empowered with transcendental potency for overcoming the multiple hurdles that unceasingly arose. As had been indicated by a narrow escape just prevenient to his widespread preaching career. Maharaj uses a lot of fancy words in this book. He has a whole glossary at the end explaining why he does it, and he explains a lot of these words that nobody else uses. Actually, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta himself did the kind of, many people couldn't understand him because he used such big words. So in that same mood, Maharaj has done that in this book. Prior to renting the house at 1 Ultadingi Junction Road, that's where Prabhupada met Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. Early one morning, Srila Saraswati Thakur set out with Kunja Bihari Prabhu and Ananta Vasudev Prabhu to inspect it. Walking along the footpath, he was just about to step under a shop awning when it suddenly crashed down in front of him, its prop having been slightly impacted by a car. Had it collapsed even a second later, it would have landed on his head. Ananta Vasudev Prabhu later commented, "Who knows whether this dramatic performance of being mysteriously saved from an unthinkable event and imminent danger on the day of starting an auspicious undertaking for founding Sri Bhaktivinod Asan was a harbinger of the future history of the Gaudiya Math." So that's what that first temple was called. We recently had an article in BTG about it. Devotees have renovated this place, this Ultadangi temple, Sri Bhaktivinod Asan. The very day on which the initial preparations for establishing a center for propagating actual truth around the universe were made, our Gurudev made us understand the Shastriya proclamations, Shriyangshi Bahu Vignani. Many obstacles arise in auspicious activities, and Sri Bhakti Marg Iha Kantaka Koti Rudha. In this world, the path of devotion is beset with millions of thorns. To propagate the truth, one must be ready to take the burden of numerous varied perils, if not to place one's very life at stake. As the morning speaks for the day, so did our Guru Maharaj predict the future of Gaudiya Math preaching by staging this pastime to indicate that we should be ready. So I'll just go on to different ones. This is the second little essay. There was more to that one, but give you a taste of these different ones. This one is called The Revolutionary Preacher of Truth. This is a quote apparently from him. The spiritually minded will judge how many major revolutions in history compare to the revolutionary preaching by the Gaudiya Math against the materialistic thought patterns of the world. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati inherited the urge to preach from his father and mentor, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. One thing to note is how Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's relationship with Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he didn't just see him as a father. He saw him as a Mahabhagavat, pure devotee, liberated soul. He had the utmost respect for him. And right from the very, practically beginning of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's life, he helped serve in his mission. Of course, we all know the story. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta prayed for a ray of Vishnu to come and assist him. So that's an indication, of course, that he was a Nitya Siddha. And he showed it right from the beginning. There was no nonsense in his life. He was very serious, even as a young boy. So he was a very enthusiastic and capable assistant to his father. He certainly carried on the mission that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur began. It says here, his father and mentor, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, energized by the Thakur's vision of Shuddha Bhakti, diffusing throughout the globe, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati had an unrelenting drive to deliver Shuddha Bhakti to all jivas in the universe, and even to those beyond it. He would sometimes say like that. He wasn't just talking about making this earth Krishna conscious, he wanted to make the whole universe Krishna conscious. He wanted to capture the whole territory of Maya and convert it to Krishna consciousness. He could not tolerate that there be any place devoid of Krishna bhakti, not restricted within the cultural horizon of Bengal. He wanted to annihilate misconceptions at all levels and all cultures of human society and implement, as he called it, full-fledged theism everywhere. Even though seemingly impossible, he took it as his duty to spread Shuddha Bhakti by all means and at all cost. To establish Lord Chaitanya's mission, the fetters of caste, ritual, and indeed all pre-existing stereotypes and dogmas would have to be demolished. Hence, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati inevitably became a revolutionary. His efforts were concentrated in Bengal, where Gaudiya Vaishnavism had lost its original dynamism, and from the ethnological perspective had transmuted into yet another component of the vast heterogeneous mosaic known as Hinduism. Although widespread, Vaishnav Dharma was enveloped by a thick fog of nescience, having become synonymous with artificial shows of ecstasy, mantras imparted for money, and flesh-eating, quote, devotees, cheaters competing to be lauded as avatars, Siddha Pranali initiation for the asking. If you don't know what that is, that's the guru tells you who you are in the spiritual world. And descriptions of the amorous pastimes of Sri Sri Radha Krishna bandied about like cheap market gossip. In this way, Prakrita Sahajiyas had etiolated the movement of Lord Chaitanya into a foolish and immoral travesty of Vaishnav Dharma. Srila Saraswati Thakur had to establish a genuine parampara, which had all but vanished. To purge the Gaudiya lineage of impurities, he publicly decried ecclesiastical and social conventions that were suffocating Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's sampradaya. Animated with the heroic spirit of Hanuman in opposing Ravana, Srila Saraswati Thakur committed himself to a lifetime of struggle against the beneficiaries of the rotten status quo. So let's see, we'll get some quotes from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta in this context. Do not try to discover the nature of truth by the exercise of your imagination. Do not endeavor to attain the truth through experience of this world. Do not manufacture truth in order to satisfy your erring inclinations or hastily accept anything for the reason that it satisfies such inclinations. Do not regard as truth anything that has been, quote, built up or has the support of a majority of people like yourself, nor is untruth anything that is rejected by the overwhelming majority. According to the scriptures, there will be found hardly one in a crore of human beings who really worships the truth. What is proclaimed by the united voices of all the people of this world as truth may turn out to be false. Therefore, cease to confront the truth in a challenging mood. The truth is not brought into existence by such arrogance. One has to approach the truth in the spirit of absolute submission. It is necessary to listen to truth. Truth is self-revealing, and only when it is pleased to reveal itself can its actual nature be known to us and not otherwise. Most of these quotes, they were originally spoken in Bengali. There's some English. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta wrote some English essays, but generally he preached in Bengali. And he had, several of his disciples were avid note takers. So we have pretty much word for word many of his lectures, just because they wrote down what he said. Of course, they weren't recording, but they were recording in their writing. So there were most things were spoken in Bengali, and then they've been translated. He explained why broadcasting the truth was rare. Everyone is eager for adoration by others, not for the absolute truth. Those who make a show of being preachers do not disturb mankind, but rather maintain everyone's present mentality while busily protecting their own existence. Therefore, there is no propagation of the truth, since one's popularity is not served by speaking or hearing the truth. Pure items are rare and not easily attainable, and so are not much appreciated. Similarly, there is no respect for those who do not misguide people, but are busy trying through Sankirtan and Harikatha to turn them toward the Lord. At present, it is fashionable to be cheated by those who, in the name of Dharma, misguide people. Real devotees do not speak to satisfy their audiences. They do not cheat people. Rather, pure devotees reveal the defects of cheaters who love to compromise. Only fortunate persons learn to be cautious after hearing the words of saints. Although the words of genuine devotees may appear to contradict our present taste and experience, nonetheless, they are most auspicious for us. Let's see. Srila Saraswati Thakur was not for sectarian coexistence, conciliation, or syncretism. His sole means for bridging the abyss between others and himself was to exhort them to come to his side. That was his bridge preaching. You're on the other side of the bridge, so come over on my side of the bridge. He spoke against mushy tolerance of nonsensical ideas in the name of ecumenism, which he anyway took as a nebulous and impossible dream. Unless people were prepared to forswear miscellaneous rubrics of cheating religion and simply surrender unto Krishna, he expostulated against that style of utopian consignity so cherished by worldly idealists who aimed at attuning all streams of human thought within an inclusive, tolerant, pluralistic, open-minded ethos in defiance of Krishna. As capsulized in Ram Krishna's catchy jingle, Yatamat Tatapat. So we've all heard that one, right? All are approaching the Absolute in diverse ways. That's what it's translated, Yatamat Tatapat. Srila Saraswati Thakur countered this by stating that those who worship on assorted religious paths cannot possibly serve Bhagavan. He taught that real harmonizing is achieved only by aligning with Krishna, whereby everyone's actual self-interest would be automatically fulfilled, and that any other attempts for consentaneity, however seemingly noble, would merely engender further envy, rivalry, and competition, and thus were actually disjunctive and ungodly. Let's see. So here's another quote from him. We do not subscribe to the way in which Hindus, Mohammedans, Christians, etc., have been endeavoring to set forth their respective contentious views. Neither has the obsolete quarrel between the Shaktas and the Vaishnavas any bearing on the subject matter of our preaching. Our words will never die as long as time endures, nay, even after time itself has ceased to function. The fact is that once a person becomes really conversant with the message of Sri Chaitanya Dev about the function of spiritual love, all little narrownesses are eliminated once and for all. There is no dharma other than Vaishnava dharma. It is the eternal dharma of all jivas. Whatever else is propagated in the world as dharma is either a step toward or perversion of Vaishnava dharma. There is no use in being a Christian, Muslim, Hindu, animal, bird, tree, stone, demigod, human being, or demon. Let all become Vaishnavas and be situated in their eternal constitutional position. This is what Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu effected when he went to South India, where he loudly chanted the Lord's glories while traveling. His chanting created many Vaishnavas. By his mercy, as he perambulated Jharikhand forest, even the birds, animals, trees, and creepers became Vaishnavas. Worshippers of Shiva and Durga, atheists, Hindus, Muslims, Buddhists, impersonalists, materialists, mental speculators, yogis, ascetics, learned, foolish, sick, healthy, all became Vaishnavas. Mahaprabhu's only weapon was the chanting of Krishna's holy names. Those who became Vaishnavas in turn made others Vaishnavas by acting as spiritual masters under Mahaprabhu's order. So let me go on to the next essay. Oh, this one's quite long. Let's see here. Yukta Vairagya. Quote, an acharya who comes for the service of the Lord cannot be expected to conform to a stereotype. He must find the ways and means by which Krishna consciousness may be spread. So even though he was so fixed on presenting things as they, you know, are the truth, still, he did used everything in Krishna's service to deliver that message. So here Maharaj quotes Rupa Goswami about Yukta Vairagya. Let's see. Move on here. Considering that for the worldly minded to be benefited, they would first have to respect him and his representatives, Srila Saraswati Thakur donned elegant, how do you pronounce that? Livery, it means clothes, with ornate Western style furniture, invited socialites to hear Harikatha in gorgeously built temples, met with kings, and invited governors and other high-ranking officials of the British Raj to preside over Gaudiya Math functions, all simply to gain the confidence of materialistic persons, to get them to give a hearing to and acknowledge his message. Everything of this world is meaningless if conceived of without relationship to Krishna. He explained, many make a drama of chanting 3 lakh names, yet merely a show of chanting without disturbing others will not benefit anyone, except perhaps oneself. Therefore, we are preaching by approaching the people of the world dressed even somewhat better than they, showing knowledge even somewhat greater than theirs, being even somewhat more stylish than they, without which they would think us worthless and not listen to our Harikatha. I have to go to various places for propagating Harikatha, so I must present myself as a learned and decent gentleman. Otherwise, non-devotees will not give me their time. Bhakti is not a blind process. To whatever frontiers of intelligence ordinary men can lift themselves, devotees must go further. Let's see. Is this the one? Anyway, he says, I understand that a certain devotee has decided to construct a thatched cottage for the sake of improving his sadhana, thus placing obstacles to the propagation of Hari Kirtan in Madras. Even if he continues with such activities of sense enjoyment for many lifetimes, Hari Kirtan will simply go on without cessation. But it is improper that anyone's inclination to serve the Lord and his devotees be attenuated even up to the last breath. I am not in favor of building a thatched cottage within the city as a residence for sannyasis. For that purpose, a Himalayan cave would be better, or one could do bhajan by becoming a tree like Yamalarjuna. Hari Kirtan is the only necessity in this valuable human life. It is not required to place stumbling blocks to preaching by citing Nirjan bhajan as an excuse for inactive life. or accepting meaningless poverty on the plea of renunciation. So he wanted his disciples to preach. There's one quote I'm trying to, is this it? When the governor of Bengal, Sir John Anderson, visited Mayapur, so he was the governor, that was the British Times, arrangements for receiving him and his gubernatorial party were made by a Calcutta hotel. So he was visiting Mayapur, but apparently they hired a hotel management, which on Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's order supplied meat and other items to British taste. How about that, huh? When Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati suggested a similar approach for foreign preaching, Srimad B.R. Sridhar Maharaj protested that it would invite criticism. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta replied, here we go, listen to this one. I decided all these things thousands of births ago. We have to do anything and everything for serving Mahaprabhu. On another occasion, he had cigarettes provided for a visiting German scholar. I read this, I said, oh my. I decided all these things thousands of births ago. Wow. That shows how important the preaching was in this time, right? He was thinking so far ahead what he was going to do. Thousands of births in the future. Amazing. Also shows how inconceivable Lord Chaitanya is, Lord Chaitanya's movement. Srila Saraswati Thakur was sometimes criticized as overstepping Srila Rupa Goswami's proscription of Maharambha. Proscription means it's opposite of prescription, proscribe, don't do it. His proscription of Maharambha, ventures requiring intense endeavor, like establishing a costly temple. So in Rupa Goswami's Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he cautions a bit about doing things that take a lot of effort. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, while explaining to his disciples the section of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu wherein this injunction lay, Srila Saraswati Thakur justified his position. It is a question of personal ability. One man might manage an empire and still find time for leisure, whereas another, despite laboring without respite, can barely maintain his family. In other words, whether an undertaking is considered great or small depends on the capacity of the individual. So then there's another section on Vaishnav sannyas, which is quite interesting, actually. Because there was no sannyas before Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, not Vaishnavas, Gaudiya Vaishnavas, they all became Babaji's. They just put on, you know, like a gumsha, basically. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he studied Vaishnav sannyas in Madhva Sampradaya, Ramanuja Sampradaya. And he took it as a... The thing about Babaji Paramahamsa means you're above everything, basically. You're, you know, above the rules. But he didn't, he thought it was an act of humility, actually, to accept sannyas. And anyway, he made a number of sannyasis. I forget, 20-something, I think, sannyasis. They're all listed in this book. They're little biographies, short biographies of many of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's disciples. And there's a whole list of many of the names, too, the ones that they knew, all of his, the disciples that people knew are listed at the end of the book. Let's see. There's an interesting section on 64 rounds, but I don't know if I'm going to find it here. So anyway, there's a whole section about sannyas. Oh, here we go. I'll just mention this here. While donning red cloth, he always calls it red, we would, you know, we say orange, but anyway, it's red. While donning red cloth as a sannyasi, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta kept his bead bag white, considering japa beads representative of the purely transcendental and not to be colored with varnashram designations. So sannyasis is within varnashram. That's why Babaji said they wear white. So he kept his bead bag white because japa. It is transcendental. It's not part of varnashram. White signifying the purity of a transcendentally situated Paramahamsa, his retaining a white bead bag indicated his actual position. That his outward change of dress to facilitate preaching did not diminish his unchangeable internal attitude of genuine attachment to the holy names and concomitant detachment from anything material, such as the opportunity for self-assertion in the name of sannyas. Besides, it indicated that he conceived of sannyas as more than a strategic adjustment for preaching, and that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati later imparted to his sannyas disciples the esoteric Gopi Bhava mantra for Gaudiya renunciants given in Sri Gopal Bhatta Goswami's Sangskar Deepika, suggested that above and beyond renunciation, Gaudiya sannyas is meant for embracing the mood of servanthood to the servants of Srimati Radharani. Okay, I'll skip that. So I don't know if anyone would like to. I'll go on reading unless someone. It's about quarter till. If someone would like to say something, otherwise I'll go on. Too rigid morality. Yes. Ragatmaka Prabhu.
So it sounds like he was definitely not in favor of interfaith dialogue. What was Prabhupada's take on that? Did that just come about after Prabhupada?
Well, we have experience of Prabhupada talking interfaith in conversations, at least with Christians. What did he do every time? He got on their case for eating meat. And you don't really see Prabhupada discussing theology with other religions. And if you read it tends to be mundane Western philosophy, but that philosophy book that Prabhupada was working on, it's not that he didn't really entertain what people had to say in other philosophies. He always just gave our point of view. So, I mean, of course, Prabhupada always encouraged, and he encouraged people to, you know, help us, just like when there are a couple of examples of Christian priests or whatever they, monks, you know, encouraged them to chant the holy name of the Lord. But one thing is, Prabhupada didn't feel, I guess I could say, the need to learn anything from someone else. Remember when I was doing Lilamrita interviews and I met one professor, he said, Bhaktivedanta Swami was not my ideal because he never felt the need to listen to anybody else, something to learn from others. And he said, like Thomas Merton, he was a Christian Catholic monk, he said even on his deathbed he was asking about Buddhism, you know. So he thought this was very open-minded, and Prabhupada wasn't like that, you know. So immediately I thought, well, Prabhupada's a self-realized soul. He doesn't need to hear about Buddhism when he's dying. You know? So in that sense, Prabhupada was completely convinced. And anything that would help the preaching, I guess, you know, as an overriding principle, if it would help to spread Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada was willing to cooperate with others. But obviously he wasn't going to, you know, change any of our philosophy or anything he was saying. He also wanted, in fact, he would say many times, so just join us. Now, that was generally the word Prabhupada would use. You join us, and then that's how we'll cooperate. In other words, I'm in charge here, and we're spreading Krishna consciousness, and if you want to take part, because what we're doing is so great, and look at these, you know, young boys and girls are becoming so pure, the pure lovers of God, and so on. Of course, he had great realization of the efficacy of what he was doing, and he wanted other people to help. That was his approach to it, it seemed like. Yes, Natika Gopal.
I thought it was the wonderful story of how he got his honorific title, Siddhanta Saraswati, bestowed upon him. The in ISKCON, we published the Rupanuga Vedic College in St. Louis. They published the English translation of Surya Siddhanta by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And in it, there's His Holiness Bhaktivikas Swami does like the foreword or something. And so explaining that when he was in his teens and up to mid-20s, he was doing a lot of Jyotish work, but Prabhupada said he was doing, he was a great astronomer and mathematician, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so when he was 11, they said he understood a greater depth of Vedic astrology than many practitioners of, 50 years like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so then he started in mid-teens to translate this Surya Siddhanta, which was, of course, millions of years old. And he translated it from the Sanskrit into English. And he also did another book at the same time, Siddhanta Shiromani, a kind of similar type book. But so when he was doing this, he had tutors at that time, professional tutors and helping him in schoolwork, you know. And so when he finished one of the books when he was 19 and the other when he was around 25. But when he was 15, the tutors bestowed upon him the title of Siddhanta Saraswati. So that's how he got his name. And
Bhaktivinoda Thakur used to address him with that name. Even in letters he wrote to him, he would call him by that name.
And then later on, I mean, a little bit in his 20s, I think it was in his early 20s, the Calcutta University offered him a chair. It means they said, we want you to be a professor at our university. And he turned them down.
Mm-hmm. I think he said something about, he was concerned that they want. There would be pressure for him to get married if he was very educated.
Oh.
And he kept following that line, he was following that educational, academic path.
Yeah, yeah.
So he wanted to get away
academia,
from that.
Academia, yeah.
But he was a genius.
Yeah.
See, he published an almanac. Jyotish. Astronomy,
Yeah. So he did, he still dabbled in it. He published something, just seems like when he fixed me up. He did the Gaudiya Math, it was like, I got a new project here,
Mm-hmm.
Got to focus. And then I think he translated all that stuff into Bengali. He was
Bengali, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's why they translated it into English. That Rupanuga got it published.
Actually, there's one little thing. I just want to read this a little bit here. This chapter is called Exoteric Matters, Appearance and Dress. You might be interested in this. At just over 6 feet in height, Srila Saraswati Thakur was considerably taller than most Bengalis. His arms were long and his form graceful, graceful, I guess. His complexion was fair and his forehead broad. Normally, he wore unassuming sannyas attire consisting of top and bottom piece of non-stitched cotton dyed red, and sometimes a Punjabi, and a winter coat, cardigan, or chador. Three strands of tulsi bees adorned his neck, and an upavitra, Brahmin thread, hung over his shoulder and across his chest, or was sometimes looped around his neck. He almost always wore simple round spectacles, in later life bifocals. He would sit with his back erect, not leaning on anything for support, and typically appeared grave. His skin was so delicate that even the slightest touch would redden it. Devotees who touched his lotus feet found them to be soft like butter. Plain wooden sandals were his normal footwear. His tilak, formed of sacred Gopi Chandan clay, was always straight and neat, even though he applied it without using a mirror. He did not like to be seen without tilak, and after bathing, he would apply it before letting anyone see him. In later life, he took a walking stick when going outside, and in rain or strong sunlight, a disciple would hold an umbrella over him. For special occasions, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati sometimes dressed opulently with leather shoes, a plush gown or long coat, and a turban. Usually only when dressing formally did he wear his wristwatch. In that era, a status symbol unexpected of sadhus. Since it was customary to offer gifts of cloth to sadhus, Srila Saraswati Thakur mostly wore clothes given to him by devotees. So, anything else? Yes, Prang Govinda Prabhu.
Many things, but one thing I would just like to mention. 1924, on his 50th birthday or 50th anniversary, he called the disciples and says, today is the Beso Puja. Before that, Beso Puja was not there until Guru Purnima.
Mm-hmm.
Guru Purnima was the day for all the gurus, Beso Puja. So 1924, when all the disciples came, and then he says, do you know why you need to do Beso Puja on my birthday? Because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came and he left, but you are still here. Narottam Das Thakur came, many great scholars in Gauriya tradition came and gone, but you did not get delivered. The person who delivered you is more important than all other previous. Therefore, on that person's appearance day, you should celebrate birthday or a Beso Puja. Mm-hmm. It's very profound. Like, you know, I can relate myself. So it's very nice. Many things he changed. In that lecture, he was asked by disciples that your Gurudev gave three instructions so prominent. Apparently, you broke all three. So they say, then he asked, what are the instructions my Gurudev gave? He said, don't go to Calcutta. He said, I never went to Calcutta. He said, you open the temple, Ultradanga, the first temple in Calcutta. He said, to your vision, it was Calcutta.
Mm-hmm.
But my vision is where my Guru Maharaj's lotus feet is adored and needed most. I carried the lotus feet of my Gurudev and there. But you saw it was Calcutta, so I never went to Calcutta. And then second, he says, you made so many disciples. He said, no, I never made any disciples. We are your disciple. He said, no, you are all representative of my Guru Maharaj. I have only four disciples, two legs and two hands, and they cooperate with me.
Calcutta.
Don't go to Calcutta. Or don't associate with the Vishayis. He said, I never associate with Vishayis.
Vishayis.
Yeah, means mundane, sense.
Sense enjoyers.
He said, but you are preaching every day. He said, no, they are needed Krishna consciousness. I only go there to give them. I never associate with them.
Yeah.
It was very profound.
Thank you very much. I love that book. There's one place where he quotes Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur that the Gaudiya literatures will be translated into all languages, including the vegetable tribes. It's just another one of those things that you go, what? You read it five times, you go, what is that?
Who are the vegetable tribes?
The vegetables.
Up Okay, we have just like 1 minute. Dharmaraj, let's finish up with Dharmaraj. Yeah.
So at the on the Vrindavan Parakram, the Imlitala temple, that's where the tamarind tree is since Lord Krishna's pastime. That is described that that's Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj's most favorite spot. He would be there whenever he's in Vrindavan. Every day he would be there and doing japa. That he was so literally attached to that place. He would be sitting there doing japa. And he would start his Vrindavan Parakram and end it at that spot. It's according to what the locals had mentioned. And the first Vrindavan Parakram was done by himself and three disciples. So that was the first Brajmandal Parakram, rather, was performed by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj. So just want to mention that.
Okay. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.